Mr. and Mrs. Bulstrode were almost the only locals to have a thread of contact with the spiritual community, so-called, in the big house. She pushed the parish magazine determinedly through the letterbox once a month. He delivered a single daily pint of milk. The tenuousness of this connection in no way undermined the couple's standing as a source of much juicily informative gossip. Now, of course, they were in even more demand, and Mrs. Bulstrode found herself facing a full house every time she put foot to pavement outside her front door. Demurring at first, "I know no more than I did yesterday, Mrs. Oxterby." The temptation to embroider and expand proved irresistible. And by the evening of the third day, if the inhabitants of the Lodge of the Golden Windhorse had come sailing over their crinkle-crankle wall on broomsticks, the village would have been unastonished, if not exactly sanguine.
"Are you an architect?" Hannah Kallenbach asked. "No," I said. "I know nothing about architecture." "But you do know," she said, "that the house was designed as a holiday house, that it was never meant to be lived in." As Hannah Kallenbach reached into the drawer of her heavy mahogany desk, my mind returned to the evening I told Mim how I'd spent my compensation payout. We were eating artichokes. "The villa what?" she'd said, tapping salt into her hand. "Savoie," she asked. "Savoie, S-A-V-O-Y-E, as though it was the word rather than its meaning that mattered. "I know Savoie," she said. "We went skiing there as a child. The food was terrible." Then she mumbled what sounded like savoir-faire and ruffled her hair and laughed a laugh that betrayed the hateful things she thought about me. "What do you like about this house so much anyway?" she said. And I said, "I don't know."